Tonight is anniversary night. The format of tonight's meeting will be a main speaker who will speak for 25 minutes, followed by our information break and the anniversary celebrants. Our main speaker tonight is Amy.
What? Wow. Yeah. Oh, thanks so much. Hi, I'm Amy. I'm an alcoholic. I don't think I've ever had that many people say hi to me at the same time, ever. So I want to thank Adam for asking me to speak, wherever you are. It's a big honor to be here and speaking to the mic. And I want to congratulate the celebrants. Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, pressure's on. And I want to congratulate the celebrants. Happy anniversary to all of you. You know, sometimes it takes an anniversary to really feel that gratitude and to understand what a miracle it is to be sober. And also, you know, thinking sometimes when I celebrate, I think back of not only, you know, what service I've done, but really how people have helped me, the service other people have put toward my sobriety, and then I really get gratitude. So I wish the celebrants a lot of gratitude, because that's probably one of the best feelings that you can feel. And a very little bit about myself. I'm going to set my timer, although I know I have a cue card. I grew up in Floral Park, which, if you don't know, is right on the border of Queens. And if I still live in the house I grew up in. And if you walked out of my house, to block and a half down this way is Belmont Racetrack. And a block and a half this way is Uptown. That's what you say if you want to go to the stores. I'm going uptown, and uptown being a block and a half. And in that block and a half, there are four bars, and if you turn the corner, there's two more. So a lot of drinking going on in Floral Park. They used to have Belmont Steaks, a party on Friday night before the race, because it's, you know, Belmont Park, right? But people were losing their kids. It was turning into a bucket of blood, so now they have it on Sunday afternoons. And I knew about AA growing up. My mom was an AA. She got sober when I was five. If you ever asked me if I was going to wind up here, I would say no way. And I do remember not a lot about her drinking, but I do remember her going to meetings in a bad mood and coming home in a better mood. And dressing up for anniversaries, they wore long dresses with their bouffant hairdos in the 1970s. And my father, who was a man of few words, once said that AA was the best thing that ever happened to our family. And it was. And he would go, you know, bring my mom to meetings. She didn't drive. And he loved going to open meetings and hearing stories. He was a people person. And he was actually a news reporter. Not that he reported any stories. But he loved hearing the stories. And that was that. Once my mom got sober, though, it was apparent that she had mental illness. And, you know, she was such a sweet person, but she suffered, and sometimes so do we. So that wasn't always easy until, I guess, more treatments came out later on in the 80s or 90s. So I grew up with a lot of love, a good example of sobriety and faith, but I also learned at an early age how to not recognize my feelings and to deny whatever was in front of my face. That's just how it was, and I know a lot of people had it much harder than me, believe me. So by the time I was 14, I was graduating from Our Lady of Victory Catholic School. I was a good Catholic. I liked Catholic school. I went to confession every month. I went to church every week. I believed in God. I loved God. I wanted to be good, you know. But something happened to me in between Our Lady of Victory and Floral Park Memorial Public School. I wanted a boyfriend, and I wanted to be popular. I was pretty much an uptight person. I was shy. You know, if I was walking down the block and there was a bunch of people talking, and they were laughing, I would automatically assume it was about me. I would cross the street. I just was really anxious around people. So I stole a bottle of whiskey, which was reserved for my father and my Aunt Kathy when she came over once every 6 months. They would go to town. And I snuck into Belmont Racetrack with two other girls my age, and we drank nearly the whole bottle of this scotch and whiskey. And I remember walking down Violet Avenue saying, I don't feel drunk yet. And then it hit me at the corner of Zinnia and Violet, a block up from where I live today. I never felt so good in my entire life up until that time. I was transformed. You know that thing that Bill says, I arrived, I felt like I had arrived? That's how I felt. I just was calm, I was laughing, I was physically much more relaxed, my muscles felt like rubber bands, it was great. And the next thing I know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm in my pajamas looking out of my bedroom window, I have no idea what happened that night. I have a vague recollection of somebody wiping my face in the pizza parlor, that's it. And I was astounded at myself that I could do that, because really it was probably the first bad thing that I ever did, you know, and I told myself this is bad because, first of all, God is watching me, and second of all, my mother told me, you know, my brother had had problems with drugs and alcohol, and my mom told me if you ever do this you're getting sent away, so I was afraid, you know. But within a month, I was starting to do that every weekend, because by the time I was 16, I realized if I have to be around people, then this is what I got to do. And it worked for me. So I had a lot of fun in high school. And I, you know, had a lot of friends who drank just the way that I did. Drugs aren't really a part of my story, but if you put it in front of me, I would do it. If I was drinking, if I wasn't, probably I wouldn't. And I had a good time. But by the time I was 17, it became apparent to me that I might drink a little different than my friends. If we would go out and then we would come home, then I would go out again and look for my brother who was older than me, and I wouldn't mention it to them. I drank faster than they did, and I think I drank for different reasons. I did not think that they were drinking because they were anxious. You know, but we all drank. All my good friends had, you know, a parent who was an alcoholic, every single one of them. So, and most of them weren't in AA. So anyway, that was just the norm. And then it's 18, and it comes time for me to go away to school, and I wasn't going to go away to school. There wasn't any money for that. So my friends were leaving, and I had to make friends again, and that was my my downfall, because I couldn't do it. I was a nervous wreck. Unless I had alcohol, because alcohol was liquid friendship. So if I went to the bar and I started to drink, then I was fine. And so that's what I did. I started to drink even more, and started to have panic attacks around that time. And also one night I did 3 hits of acid. That's all I'll say about drugs. But about 3 weeks after that, I was complete lunatic out of my mind. I was afraid to leave the house. I was psychotic. I thought Satan was after me. I'd be driving down the block. I'd see a license plate that said 666, and I'd be like, ah! Had to quit school. I remember going to the school psychologist at Nassau Community College and telling him, you know, I think the devil's after me. And he said, do you think I'm the devil? And I was like, no. Quit school, never went back after that day. I truly was out of my mind for about 6 months. And you know what? It wasn't just what I had done that night. It was whatever was in me was magnified 1,000%, and it wasn't good. Alcohol saved me during that time. I remember I was going out with this guy who played in a band in he was going to play one night in the city, and I was up in the attic, and the thought of driving through the Midtown Tunnel, now I'm like 19, I'm petrified, so I start drinking. And that's maybe the first time that it occurred to me that my friends are not doing this. They're not driving and drinking so they could leave to go out and drink. And but then you know how you just shake it off and say, well, maybe one of them is, or, you know, that's just the way that it is with me. And so I was kind of drinking for a leaf by that time, and I was still only 19. I moved out of my parents' house. I started to blame them, and really my great fear was that I was having what my mother had, and I was pretty sure. So moved out of the house to Forked River, New Jersey, with my sister, who is probably the only normal one in my family. I always say she's like Marilyn from the Munsters, you know? And so I lived with her. I worked as a waitress, and I remember one time we lived by this lake, and we went out and got a bottle and drank it, and when we were finished, I said, you know, let's get another one. And she said, why? And I was like, why? And it occurred to me, she will never drink like me. She doesn't think about alcohol like me. She has one or two drinks. She would go to a bar and have half a drink and leave it if she didn't like it. That to me, I still don't get why people don't drink for effect. And the more, the better. That's always how I drank. So I ended up going back to school, and then I ended up moving to Astoria. And by this time, I'm living with my friend and these two guys from Australia, and they all like to drink. And then they were moving out of the country, and it was me alone in Astoria. I knew no one. And I was back where I felt the crazies coming on again. And now I'm drinking by myself, and I'm telling myself that this is just social drinking, even though I'm with no one, because it just is. And one night I'm cleaning out this desk, because really what I thought was, I'm just crazy. If I can control my craziness, if someone could just help me with that, then I'll be able to drink like my sister or this girl, Carrie, that I always fixated on. She always looked the same coming home as she did going out, and I wanted to look that way. And But anyway, I'm cleaning out this desk my mother had given me. Now, I lived with my mother for about 4 years, and I never talked to her about alcohol. I think she worried about it when I lived with her, but she didn't really know what was going on. And I found this crumpled up piece of paper, and I opened it up, and it was an intergroup meeting list. And I called a number. And I said to the person on the other line, I don't know if I'm an alcoholic. I never had a DWI. Listen, I've been driving in blackouts since I was 17. But I talked my way out of the 3 times I got pulled over. I'm so lucky. And so were the people around me that were driving at the time. But never went to jail. I never did any of these things. I'm not sure why I'm even calling. And I don't remember what they said. I hung up. And a couple days later, I called again because I'm hoping somebody's going to say, you know what, you're too young, don't worry about it, you might have a psychiatric problem, go get help for that, but you could still drink. That's what I wanted. And instead, the guy on the other end of the phone said, it's not what you drink or how much you drink, or it's what happens to you when you do drink and what happens to you. And the truth was, anytime I drank, if I got physically hurt, it was because I was drinking. Anytime, you know, I got sick, it was because I was drinking. And so I made my first AA meeting a couple days after that. And I believe that was somewhere around March 22nd, 1990. I was 24 years old, so now I'm 52. And hopefully that will be my last drink. And so I don't have really a long story, but I will tell you that I wound up in the right place getting sober. Astoria was a great place to get sober. And back then, at the time, there wasn't really a lot of talking about the big book in the beginning for me. So I did 90 and 90 meetings, and I took all the suggestions. I made coffee. I walked to meetings with other people every night. I got a sponsor. I saw this woman share. She looked fantastic. So, you know, I thought, wow, I guess I'll ask her to be my sponsor, you know. She was very at ease with herself. She invited me to her house, and this is probably about a month after I came to AA and I started to go. And she told me her whole story, start to finish. This is the second time somebody had done that. And then she asked me to tell her about my drinking, and I did. And she told me, you know, I really identify with your drinking. And I thought to myself, oh, my God, you know, maybe I belong here, you know. Maybe I'm not just crazy. Maybe I really am an alcoholic. And a couple nights, well, when I had 90 days, she got me a speaking commitment, and I shared, you know, for the first time, I was nervous wreck. And this real rough customer at the back of the, you know, room raised his hand afterwards, and he said, you know, I really identify with you. And I thought, oh, my God, I must be an alcoholic, because he is. And everybody in Astoria had a nickname. There was Nick the Greek and Nick the Plumber and a lot of Nicks. Johnny Wheels, George Donuts, John the Carpenter. I married him later on. And it was a really great place to get sober. But after 2 years, I had become a nurse. I went back to school and became a nurse. That's a gift of sobriety. And after 2 years, I'm working at Sloan Kettering for the first time as a new nurse. I'm seeing a lot of people suffer. And I started to sink. And I realized my faith in God, I was freaked. I was like, I don't get this suffering thing. You know, I just couldn't wrap my head around it, and I couldn't trust God. And all the fears that I had always lived with, I mean, the myriad of fears that just, you know, if you've read your own fourth step, then you know what I mean, you know, just the, whether they were real or imagined, they attacked me. And I started to feel like, uh-oh, this is bad. And at the time, there was a guy named Pat H., who was new in town, and I did not like him because he was very opinionated on the way AA should be done. And one day he invited me to the diner, and I thought, does anybody else want to come? But no one did. And he sat with me, and this guy probably knew I didn't like him, and he explained to me about God in a very, very simple way. And although I did not like him, I believed every word he said, because it was simple, and I just trusted him. And he told me that if I wanted God to help me, that I would have to help others, and not to wait until I trusted God to do, you know, my fourth step, that I just had to go on with the rest of the steps, and then I would have a relationship with him. And that's what I did. And for the first time, I realized that my higher power was God as I don't understand him, and still is somewhat today. And that's fine. I don't have to. But later on in sobriety, when I had a hard time with what I was going through, I didn't have to understand God. I knew that he had got me sober, and I just had to put my trust in him and act as if I knew I needed him in my life. I know I need him in my life today. And regardless of the outcome, I just try to rely on him. And that's the other gift that AA has given me, because I don't think about drinking anymore, I could tell you that. And when I came in here at 24, I was like, I am a loser, and this is the worst life ever. And now I'm like, this is the best life ever, and I am so grateful. I don't think about drinking, but the other gift I have is that I have a faith that works. It's a very practical faith. I use it every day. I talk to God. And I am so lucky, you know, I'm so lucky for that. So if you are new or coming back and you don't have faith, it's all right, you know, just open your mind and put one foot in front of the other, and you will be given it. It's amazing how that works. And I know that God was with me the whole time. So in sobriety, like I said, I got married, I became a nurse, I've had a lot of good things happen to me. And I've had some difficult things happen to me. About 15 or 16 years ago, I had two kids. I have a daughter and a son, just about 15 months apart. I married Adam's father. I'm Adam's stepmother. Sorry, Adam. All that was good, but then came another period of time, like everybody has in their sobriety, where things start to get rough. Nobody is immune. And within a period of about 5 years, there was drinking going on in my house, and my parents and my brother all died of cancer, and my son was diagnosed with autism. So the reason why I bring that up is because I never thought that I would be able to get through that. And let me tell you, God was able to help me through that in ways you would, I mean, in personal ways, like coincidences times a million trillion. And it was just so pointed that I knew he was there with me. And I got to tell you, going through the steps and then helping somebody else has been the saving thing of my life, because really that's when I feel God. I don't feel God on a regular basis. I talk to him, but God to me is not a feeling, but when I'm helping somebody else. So what happened to me was my son was diagnosed with autism. I am freaked out. And it was in September, and there was no place for him to go to school because all the seats were filled. He had to be evaluated. It was going to take a couple months. It had to go through this whole process by this certain agency, and then maybe we'd find a school. And every minute to me, I was just like, I just want treatment for my kid, you know? So a couple months before that, I get a call from this guy, Richard, and he's like, you know, could you bring this girl to a meeting tonight? She really, she's struggling. It was actually her husband who was having a problem, but I brought her to an open meeting, and it really wasn't for her, you know, she didn't. But you know when you just connect with someone on the phone, and like you don't talk to them for 4 months, and then you could talk to them, and it's like you had just talked to them yesterday, and it was very easy like that. Her name was Lorraine. She was lovely. And so she happened to call me after about a day after I got this news, and I'm at home, and usually it was her talking to me. Now I'm just pouring my heart out to her, and this is the problem, and I need a teacher from this agency to look at Luke and help me with. And she said, you know, I'm a teacher, and I work for that agency. Can you imagine? That was like God. And I knew. I get chills every time. P.S., my son is doing great. He said something the other day to the effect of, you take care of you and I'll take care of me. You know, it's so unfair. When my 16-year-old daughter says that, I get pissed. But when he says that, I'm like, oh, you're a cutie. Poor Claire. She's a saint. But anyway, so I guess my point is AA has helped me live my life on life's terms. And the more I am there for other people, the more I keep connected to God and you, the happier I am. And I'm just so grateful. Thank you.